Hello, hello. My name is Dr. Rachel Gainsbrew, and I am obsessed with all things short-term rentals, revenue streams, and helping you navigate your career, real estate, and your busiest and most wonderful seasons of life. So grab your coffee, get comfortable as you get ready to learn and grow with me. This is the Luxury Short-Term Rental Doctor podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome to another Luxury Short-Term Rental Doctor podcast. I am so honored today to have the infamous Yoda Weiss with us. Yoda, I feel like this probably should be a standing appointment annually around this time of year when taxes are on the hearts, the minds of everyone that we know in the investing world. Guys, you're in for a treat. Yona, I would love you to go ahead and introduce yourself to the people, especially for the newbies who have not met you quite yet.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel. It's always a pleasure to join you. And yeah, we should do this. I think we do this about once a year. So let's keep it going. But for those listeners who aren't familiar with me, my name is Yona Weiss. I'm known in the real estate world as the cost seg king, which means I am a cost segregation expert. And if you don't know what cost segregation is, well, you are definitely in for a treat today because it is probably the greatest tax saving strategy that exists for real estate investors and specifically for short-term rental owners and operators. It has saved, well, I should say I've helped clients save over $1 billion in taxes. And it's just incredible to see day after day, month after month, just seeing the happy faces of clients. And yeah, we will get into it. Besides that, I am the host of the Weiss Advice podcast and a real estate investor myself as well. I'm a father of 6 children and keeps me busy, all of the above. So I'd love to share, and I'm very active on social media. So if you have not followed me on all those places, please feel free to do, and love to get to know all of you.
I love that. And I do appreciate the content that you put out, especially on LinkedIn. Yona, I need to take a page out of your book. The struggle is real for me with LinkedIn. I got to do better there for sure. But I know you're building a community there, which I absolutely love. I don't see a lot of people doing that. And it's a very important platform for us. All right. So with that, Yona, so my question to you, my very first question is, you mentioned a little bit about your background. You got the 6 kiddos. You're very busy. So is my audience, right? And I was just on a call a little bit earlier with one of the docs on their one-on-one calls, and you know, literally just trying to juggle it all, fighting for their lives, working these extra shifts, trying to onboard 1 or 2 short-term rentals. And at the end of the day, for me, the power of the cost segregation study, when it's leveraged with the short-term rental tax legislation, the loophole, if you will, I think there's so much power there where it allows our hardworking docs to maybe take a little bit of breather, create a little elbow room in their lives without necessarily having to continue down this rat race or this path of having to work extra shifts and not seeing the reward. Go for it, Yona.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right, Rachel, because if you can add income streams to help give you a little bit more buffer, but more importantly, bring along the tax savings that come along with it, you actually end up, you know, on top a lot more. And actually, that may free up more of your time. So, and I know many doctors and successful, lawyers, other professionals, but doctors specifically, who buy 1 or 2 or 3 short-term rentals, self-manage it, which seems almost daunting at first, but I know obviously you help people and train them how to do it, set up systems, and it really, once you get it set up, it really is not that much to self-manage a property. As you know, once you do that, the tax savings that come along with it can actually allow, you know, one, if you have 2, you know, let's say you have a couple and both are working, I've seen literally several scenarios where one would retire just to manage the short-term rentals and making more money after taxes because of that, instead of having two, you know, full-time, extremely busy jobs. And again, the short-term rental management can be, you know, maybe a half an hour to an hour a week per property, which, again, once you set it up, that's incredible. And so you can, like I said, you can make more money after taxes than working two full, having one job, than having a few short-term rentals, than having two full-time jobs.
You're absolutely right, Yona. And I think that's, thanks to the power of this strategy. And one of the biggest misconceptions is that either the medical professional or their spouse needs to jump through the hoops to get the sought after reps status. And that's not necessarily true. So hear me out, audience. We're not going to dive into the rep status, but if you've been hearing that word buzzing around, there's an opportunity for you to take advantage of what Yona's talking about without necessarily having rep status. As a matter of fact, you don't need it. Right. So Yona, let's dive in. So can you, for our audience, elaborate on what a cost segregation study is, and why are we super excited and dedicating an entire episode and dedicating really this entire a quarter to talking about the tax benefits that come with a cost segregation study?
Absolutely. Let's dive right in. And we will come back to and get to the reps, the real estate professional status, which again, with short-term rentals is not necessary at all in order to take advantage of this. So simply put, cost segregation is an advanced form of depreciation. Now, depreciation is a tax deduction. It sounds negative, but actually it doesn't mean that your property is going down in value. It just is the name of a tax deduction. So it's a borrowed term. And what we're doing, the IRS allows anytime you buy a property besides for your primary residence, if it's a business or rental property or investment property, you're able to literally take an income tax write-off of the entire value of that property. Okay, now you can't do it all at once, right? It's over a 39-year period for short-term rentals, for residential property and other commercial properties as well. For residential long-term rentals, it's over a 27.5-year period. But essentially what we're doing is we're taking our property, our purchase price, we subtract a small amount for land, which does not depreciate, and then we're taking that basically purchase price, that amount, dollar amount, and deducting 1/39th of that every single year. So that's depreciation. Now, in a $1 million property, you know, you're looking at about $20,000 a year, which is great. It's about 2% of your value, purchase price, that you can take every single year as a tax deduction. Now, in and of itself, that's amazing. If you can literally just reduce your tax liability by 20%, by 2%, excuse me, that's great. You know, $20,000 is certainly beneficial. What cost segregation does is it takes the property and it breaks it down into its individual components. And instead of saying everything is depreciating on this longer 39-year schedule, the IRS actually assigns value or time lines to certain items in a property. So for example, anything that is non-structural, including furniture, fixtures, appliances, any type of equipment, even flooring and window treatments. You know, I see the beautiful curtains in your background there, countertops, cabinets, shelving, and many more things. All of that depreciates over a five-year schedule. And oftentimes this can be 20 to 30% of the entire purchase price is going into those items and those components, which means I can now take 20 to 30% of the value of the property over as a deduction over a five-year period, as opposed to taking 2% a year. We're taking 20% or 30% upfront in the first few years. Now, there's another category which is called land improvements, which depreciates over a 15-year schedule. And especially in short-term rentals, if you have a swimming pool, obviously this doesn't apply to condos, but if you have a swimming pool or you have a patio, even the sidewalk or the driveway, any pavement, concrete, landscaping, fencing, so many different things that are outside that are on top of the land has value to it, and we can depreciate that over a 15-year schedule. Now, 5 and 15 years is faster, but it's not like, you know, huge amount up front. However, when we factor in this thing called bonus depreciation, which used to be 100%, currently it's at 60% for the year 2024, may come back. But bonus depreciation means once you've done a cost segregation study and accelerated that depreciation, those deductions, you have the option to take all of that, or the now 60% of that, upfront in the first year. So it's a big lump sum and gets you a huge tax write-off. Okay, and that's why we talked about at the very beginning why this is such a powerful strategy. What we're doing is we are reducing our tax liability by creating these huge, you know, big deductions. And we're not creating new deductions or something out of thin air. What we're doing is just taking from that pool of potential deductions that we may never see and pulling it forward and taking advantage of really our own, it's almost like equity in the property, so to speak. And we're actually using that as cash flow, because reducing your tax liability just has, you know, you pay less income tax, which has gives you more money to potentially reinvest.
Okay, so Yona, every single time I have a conversation with you, I learn something new. off script question for you. So pickleball court.
Oh yeah.
Can we talk about that for a second? I don't think we've ever covered that. Sure. You're mentioning some land improvements. This sounds interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Any type of land improvement. So a pickleball court, you know, obviously that's the most trendy thing right now. But whether it's, you know, anything that's pavement, if it's a tennis court or swimming pool, oh, playground equipment, anything that is outside has value to it. And now we can depreciate that again over that 15-year schedule, faster schedule, but is eligible for bonus depreciation as well. And so, yeah, nice. Certainly, you know, jacuzzi, anything that's outside that, you know, can depreciate faster.
Oh, love that. Okay. So that really informs my decision. It puts a little pressure on a project that I have going on. As a matter of fact, you know, another off script question that I have for you, and I love doing these interviews, is because I get to let everyone take a peek under the hood of projects that I'm working on. So what if I'm working on a new construction project, like from scratch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So cost segregation, generally what we're doing is when we buy a property, we're taking that purchase price. And again, depreciation is not intrinsic to the property per se, because we're buying an older property and now we can depreciate it based on our purchase price. Brand new. The difference with a new construction is mm-hmm. that we're building it on. So we have the actual costs. And so, oh, he's cute. She, I don't know.
There's a storm, so she's really nervous. So for those who are listening, Peggy just joined the podcast. She has entered the recording room.
Now, the difference with new construction is that, first of all, we have all the costs. We know what all the line items are, what we're putting in, and we're going to depreciate those costs, the actual money spent, as opposed to like a new purchase price. And so that's a big difference. It also, the other second difference is that it only begins once you place the project in service, meaning yeah. once you finish construction and have it ready to be rented, that's when depreciation is going to start. And so yes, you can certainly do a cost seg on new construction, and certain, you know, in many cases it can be even more advantageous.
Okay, I love that. Can you define for our audience, what does it mean to place the property in service?
So again, depreciation is a deduction for rental properties or for investment properties. And so the IRS looks at, well, when can you start depreciating that? And their definition of that is called placed in service as a rental once it's ready to be rented. And so it can take on different forms. When you buy a property and it's ready to go, you can use that date, you know, the closing date, as your place in service date when you can start depreciating it. However, if it's a new construction, again, it's going to be once the project's complete. It doesn't even necessarily need like a C of O, you know, a certification of occupancy, et cetera, but it would have to be ready to be rented. So once you have that status, you can now start depreciating it.
Love that. Love that. So Yona, let me ask you this. I know that traditionally a lot of the investors in our world have invested in syndications, multifamily, and so on and so forth. And so when we hear cost segregation, we're typically thinking along the lines of huge REITs, which are the huge chain apartments, and getting cost segregation studies for those. And the investment to get one is worthwhile, of course, because we're talking about millions and millions of dollars, dozens and dozens of doors. So what would you say to set the expectation for our audience, the investment would look like for someone purchasing a house that is about $700,000, mm-hmm. for instance, a 5-bedroom home in a mountain area or in a beach market. What does that look like? Because when I think of multifamily, I'm thinking $25,000, somewhere along those lines.
Well, you're absolutely right in that, you know, CASA can be done on all types of properties and has most traditionally been done for commercial properties, you know, multifamily, office, industrial, storage, you name it, because it's a great deduction. And, you know, the higher the purchase price, the more benefit there is, because it is, like I said, like a percentage of the purchase price that you can take as accelerated depreciation. So you're buying a $10 million property and you're able to take, you know, 20% of that upfront. You're talking about $2 million of deductions, which is, you know, obviously huge. The good thing is that the cost of getting a cost segregation done is not contingent on the tax savings. It's a flat fee and is actually pretty nominal when you think about it. So it doesn't matter if it's $1 million property or a 10 or even $100 million property, the fee is pretty much going to be around the same. And when I look at smaller properties or single families, like you mentioned, 700,000, well, actually my rule of thumb, just based on the numbers themselves, is that any property purchased for over $200,000 is already worthwhile. Not just worthwhile, but 10x the actual after-tax savings from the cost of getting something like this done. And so, it, you know, people, and I've read stuff on the internet and people putting out blogs and stuff that, yeah, this can cost $30,000, you know, $40,000, or you said $25,000. No, it costs like $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 to get something like this done, which is pretty reasonable. So again, if you're buying a $700,000 property and we're able to take, you know, 20% of that upfront, that's $140,000. We're talking about spending $3,000 or $4,000 to get $140,000 tax write-off. It's a no-brainer. It really is.
Okay, so this is awesome. And so that would be one side of the equation. What would the investment be as it relates to the opportunity? And I'm glad you've normalized the numbers for us a little bit, because $200,000 is, oh my gosh, it's very approachable for many who are a little bit nervous about going all in. No one wants to jump in head first necessarily. You want to kind of dip a toe into real estate investing. So that is one side of the coin. So now let's talk about the other side of the coin in terms of who would benefit the most from this strategy. Like I say, we're the Luxury Short-Term Rental Doctor Show, but we have a variety of listeners. Some of them are coming from big tech. Some of them are just getting started, maybe a resident at a hospital. They haven't gotten their big boy, big girl salary quite yet. And so for different folks, depending on salary threshold, where they fall in line in the tax brackets, right. Where would you say, if I don't know if you have an opinion one way or another, who would benefit the most from going all in on taking advantage of it now with, you know, the current salary thresholds?
Sure. Now, I think one of the most important things we have to mention when bringing up this topic is something you alluded to earlier about the real estate professional status, and kind of just give it a little more context and understand this. Obviously, you're talking, our listeners are people who are, you know, working people, okay? Which means they are likely not going to be full-time in the real estate business. Now, if you have a spouse that is full-time in the real estate business, that's obviously a wonderful thing in terms of this tax deduction. So let me back it up and give it a little more context, and then we'll get to, and you know, bring it all home with answering the question about the income threshold and tax brackets and things like that. Because depreciation is considered a passive deduction, okay? And that's important to note, because the IRS defines real estate as rental income that you get from your properties is treated differently than your Schedule E, your Schedule C, your business income, or your W-2, or even 1099 income. And therefore, depreciation can only be used, and I'm saying this with a caveat, but can only be used to offset your passive income, your rental income. Now, passive income is not defined how we would define it, right? First of all, real estate is not passive, right? There's very little about real estate that is passive, yet the IRS defines that. Stocks, for example, seem extremely passive, yet the IRS does not define stocks investing as passive income, right? And so we have to put it in context. We have to understand this. Rental income is going to be treated as passive income. Your depreciation can be used to solely offset your rental income. Okay, so now you buy an Airbnb for $700,000. In your example, let's say you're making, I don't know, $35,000, $40,000 after taxes. After all expenses, et cetera, your net income on the year. Well, that's amazing. First of all, you've just made, $40,000 of extra income from one property. Okay, now just put that in context. Think about that for a second. That's pretty awesome, right? That is called passive income. So your depreciation on our $700,000 house, regular straight line depreciation, would give you about $15,000 or so, which we can now reduce our $40,000 of income by $15,000 and only be taxed on the remaining $25,000. Okay, comes in costing. Well, before we get to cost segregation, if you are a real estate, if you or your spouse are what's called reps, real estate professional status, which means you're full time in the real estate business, you can use depreciation to offset not only your passive income but also your active income. Now, the difference between, and what we preface with this and talk about it a lot, the short-term rental quote-unquote loophole, it's not really a loophole because it's in the tax code, but what this says is that you don't need to be a real estate professional. If you self-manage your property and you have to put in a certain number of hours, they're called material participation hours, but it's very minimal in comparison. So you can put in 100 hours a year, and which is pretty doable if you are, especially in the first year of ownership when you're spending the time setting it up, etc. 100 hours plus you have to have more time than any other individual, which means you cannot, right, be put, farming it out to a management company. You have to be self-managing it. But again, this is a threshold I've seen hundreds of investors manage and get and use this advantage to them, which once you have that, allows you to use depreciation to offset your active income because it turns the Airbnb to be an active income, no longer passive income. Okay, this is huge because here's where cost segregation comes in. Now, go back to our example, that $700,000 house. Well, again, $15,000 depreciation deduction is pretty great. Now, you have to remember there are other deductions as well. So I kind of gave that just kind of in general, where you make $40,000, you take off $15,000. Well, if you have a mortgage, you're also going to subtract the mortgage interest. You're also going to subtract, right, any insurance. You're also going to subtract a lot of other things, which turns out that that $40,000 of income is in most cases going to be almost all, profit because you're not going to be taxed on a lot of it. Comes cost segregation and says, hey, if we can take 20% of that up front, which again is $140,000. Now with the 100% bonus depreciation, again, I'm throwing a lot of terms here, but just kind of follow the thread here. I can now deduct instead of, $15,000, I can now deduct $140,000. Well, if I only made $40,000 and just keeping things all simple, I have this extra $100,000 of deductions. If I'm not a real estate professional and I'm not a short-term rental owner, that's just considered a passive loss and I can't use it. It just kind of sits there in an imaginary bank account on my tax return. I can use it next year, potentially against passive income. But here's where the short-term rental loophole or the real estate professional status comes in. I can now use those to offset my other sort, my W-2 or other source of income as well. And that's where this becomes extremely powerful, as I mentioned, reducing your taxable income by six figures with just one rental property is huge. Again, after taxes, we're going to be saving a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Even enough to, literally enough, and I've seen this on many occasions, save enough money by doing a cost segregation to have a down payment for a second property. That's how powerful this is.
It's so powerful. And it's like, how do we do this again and again? Can we rinse and repeat this as much as possible? And that's why I think this conversation is very important, guys, because back in 2022, it was 100% bonus depreciation. In 2023, it was down to 80%. Now we're in 2024, it's down to 60%, but we're crossing all of our fingers because there's legislation in place for it to go back to 100%. And let me tell you, once it's 100%, you're not going to find me anywhere. I'm going to be out here on the streets buying up as much as I can. Can't no one talk to me. I'm going to be on such a high horse. Like, no one talks to nobody. Breathe. Let's go. It's game on. But still, at 60%. You know, I just want everyone to get their head in the game and start understanding how to evaluate property, find the right markets, because it's a win-win either way. It's a win at 60%, but at 100%, oh my gosh, which I'm fairly optimistic. I think, you know, if we know anything about the government right now, the politicians, they want their benefits. So I feel like it's going to pass. I really do. I don't know. Do you have any opinions one way or another, Yona?
Yeah, absolutely. The legislation, was passed in the House and is currently waiting on the Senate to be voted on. If that does pass and return the 100% bonus, obviously the whole point of the bonus depreciation, why it was introduced back in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2017, was to spur the economy, right? Tax deductions in general, you have to understand the tax code is really, as Tom Wheelwright says in Tax-Free Wealth, that's where I understood this for the first time, highly recommend my book if you haven't read it, from the Rich Dad Advisor, Tom Wheelwright. He says it's an incentive guide, okay? The government puts out different tax deductions to incentivize people to do different actions. Business owners to, you know, buy equipment, you know, real estate investors to buy property, et cetera, because it spurs the economy, creates more jobs, creates more, thing all around. And so, yeah, I definitely, you know, hope and pray. And really, I'm very hopeful that it will come back, whether it's going to be this year or it may need to wait for a change of administration in the White House. I think if that does happen, again, no one knows what may happen, but if that does happen, then I see almost certainly that it will come back.
100%. So we talked about material participation. So this is in order to meet the requirements. We talked about tax brackets. We talked about property value. And so I'm so glad to see that that number has expanded. We talked about what the actual the cost segregation study would look like and the investment therein. The last thing I would say, which is a barrier, is for that individual, Yona, who's thinking to themselves, you know what, I'm going to buy a property and then sell it a year from now. I tell my community, you know what, I want you to hold on to it for at least 5 years, you know, and go in with that intention. Am I right or am I wrong? What are your thoughts?
Well, there are a lot of factors at play. You know, you can't say you buy a property, you have to hold it for 5 years. I mean, again, everyone's business plan is going to be different. However, from a tax perspective, from a depreciation standpoint, you do have to consider, you know, factors. And so one major factor to consider is something called depreciation recapture tax, which means anytime you sell a property, you are going to be faced with not only a capital gain, which people understand, if you sell a property at a profit, you're going to be taxed on the difference, right? That's called the capital gain tax. Similarly, depreciation recapture is considered an unrealized gain, which means you've taken these deductions, you're not going to be taxed on that amount that you've taken. Now, it does not mean that we're paying back depreciation, okay, at all. That's a big misnomer. I see talked about a lot on the internet, right? Oh, why do the cost? You're just going to pay it all back anyways when you sell. Not true. Being subject to a tax is very different from paying tax, okay? Because having other deductions or having other strategies to defer actually reduces or even eliminates that tax. And so there are a lot of strategies at play. I would say from, you know, all things being equal, if you want to use a conservation study, I would say you should minimally have in mind to hold the property for at least a year or two. Okay, I wouldn't say it needs to be 5 years. Obviously, the longer you hold it, the more time value of money that you have, because you're just not going to face that recapture tax on the sale. However, if your business plan is to continue buying, and this is a really important factor, right? If it's a one and done, you know, I'm going to buy one property and that's it for the rest of my life, then costing may not be the right strategy for you, okay? You may be better to just kind of keep your depreciation equal year after year. However, if you're intention is to scale, and again, this is a great cash flow mechanism to scale faster, and you want to continue buying properties year after year, or at least, you know, for the foreseeable future or the next several years, then cost seg is like almost an absolute must, because you can, even if you do sell a property, you can use the deductions from a cost seg on a new property to offset the gain on the sale from the other property. Okay, so this is another thing a lot of people don't realize. We talked about before that depreciation can generally only be used to offset passive income. Okay, and then when you're a real estate professional or the short-term rental, it may become active and then you can use it against active income as well. Another thing that a lot of people miss is that you can use the depreciation to offset gain, capital gain, or the gain from recapture tax from the sale of a property. And another really important thing is that all the properties are lumped together in one bucket, which means if you have three or four properties, the depreciation from all of them together is going to be used to offset the income from all of them together. Okay, so that's a really important factor as well.
Okay, that was so good. And you dropped so many amazing and important gems there. For those of you who are sitting in the back, be sure to rewind and listen to that again. Because you're right, Yona, what you're covering are things that we don't often hear about. And oftentimes things that we misunderstand, like with the depreciation recapture. It's like, oh my gosh, now you have to pay it all back. But that's not the case. It's all in the strategy and the intention of your future investing. So I think that's awesome. Okay, so Yona, what advice would you offer our listeners for just beginning their journey with real estate investing, especially those who are looking to dive into short-term rentals?
Well, the most important thing is education, right? I actually was a teacher for about 15 years, and so I'm very focused on education and always learning myself. You know, I'm always reading, I'm always listening to things. And I think that's really important. Obviously, if you're listening to this right now, you get that because you want to learn, you want to educate yourself. That's probably the most important thing. And having a mentor, having someone who has already accomplished what you're looking to do, will get you there 10 times faster, if not 100 times faster, than you would get there on your own. So humility is actually a really, you know, kind of underrated character trait, but I feel is probably the most powerful and the most important characteristic a person can have. Because humility, one thing about it is that it allows you to learn from others and from anyone and think like, hey, yes, I may be extremely smart, I may be extremely skilled and talented at my profession as a surgeon or whatever, but when it comes to real estate, I'm like a newbie. And you know, you have to humble yourself and you have to realize I have to get off my high horse and I have to, you know, reach out to other people, even if they're younger than me, even if they're seemingly less quote unquote educated than I am, but they've accomplished something, they've done something. And so learning from others, I think, is probably the most important factor I would give there.
Awesome. I absolutely love it. And that's why we're here, guys. We're here because we know y'all are busy. Y'all are doing all the things. And so I want to make sure to bring as much value as possible, bring on the experts to give you guys the inside scoop on what's out there and what's available to you for this journey. So Yona, let's wrap it up. Before we conclude, can you please remind our audience where all can they find you?
Well, as I mentioned, I'm very active on all the social media platforms, especially LinkedIn, as you alluded to. I love LinkedIn as a business professional networking platform, and I've created an incredible real estate community there. And please, if you follow me on any of these sites, don't just hit that follow button, right? Take 10 seconds and just write a little note that you heard me on Rachel's show and, you know, just drop a little note. It takes 10 seconds and actually creates that conversation. And I love having conversations with, you know, hundreds, thousands of people that I've had over the years. And, you know, let's create that conversation. One other thing I would say, just I failed to mention it earlier, but really important thing, you know, we talked about all these numbers. We talked about, you know, what does it really mean? We always offer a free feasibility analysis or a free estimate for any property. So if you're thinking about buying a short-term rental or you're thinking about getting a consideration done, reach out. You know, again, you can go to yonaweiss.com or you can go to any of the social platforms, just shoot me a note and we can run the numbers and you can actually take it back to your CPA and say, hey, is this going to help me or is this going to hurt me? You know, what's better, using the regular straight line depreciation method or using this consideration accelerated depreciation method? And again, it's all educational. So feel free to reach out in that. And, you know, Rachel, this has always been a pleasure. I love talking to you and appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, Yona, it has been such an honor and delight to have you share all of your insights. You gave us a couple of mic drops and dropped a bunch of gems as well. So thank you so much for joining us today and for the impactful work that you do for our busy, burnt out medical professionals just trying to find some breathing room in their lives. So massive thank you to you, my friend. And listeners, remember, the path to success in real estate, especially short-term rentals and midterm rentals, is paved with knowledge, strategy, and the invaluable kind of advice that we are getting today from experts like Yona Weiss. Keep learning, my friends. Keep investing. And it is time to build, my friends. So let's make it happen. Until next time, keep thriving. Thank you so much for tuning in. Love you all to the moon and back. Bye-bye for now.